You're listening to Seattle Sports Saturday, with Lydia Cruz, Curtis Rogers, and Taylor Jacobs on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Coming up in this hour, we're going to take a look at some other games in the Pac-12 today. Big day in the South as all four teams vying for first place. They're all tied at first place, 2-1. They're playing each other, ASU, Utah, Arizona, USC. Those games go down today. Big, big day in the Pac-12, not just here in the North with UW and Oregon, but also in the South. A lot of jockeying for position. And then at 10:30, we're going to bring back a segment that had some success.
Yeah.
We ran it by the focus group. They said bring it back. Asking for a friend. Those sports questions you have that you may be afraid to ask out loud, but if you text them into the Coors Light text line, 710-710, we'll ask them for you and hopefully get you an answer. That's coming up at 10:30.
Not for you, but for your friend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which, of course, we know that you're asking for them.
Yes. Yeah, you don't need to put your name on this.
No.
Unless you want to. Like, shout out to you. Tip of the cap to you if you want to put your name on it. But, yeah, let's get some college football scores going right now. Clemson, number 3, Clemson. They're up 10-0 on Louisville halfway through the second quarter. Trevor Lawrence with a touchdown pass today.
It's a hair, man.
Yeah. Travis Etienne with 92 rushing yards early in that one. Oklahoma up 20-7 on West Virginia midway through the second quarter. Jalen Hurts, a perfect 9-for-9, 135 yards, 2 touchdowns. CeeDee Lamb with 2 receptions for 46 yards. Stop the presses. Wisconsin has allowed a touchdown.
Whoa.
Oh, no.
They're only up 10-7 right now on Illinois. Only the third time this season Wisconsin has allowed points.
That's wild.
Like, they've had 4 shutouts this year.
Crazy.
And only 2 games this season before today that they allowed points in. But Illinois putting 7 on the board on Wisconsin, but was the Badgers.
Illinois, of all places. Yeah. Let's go.
Jonathan
That's
Taylor?
My mom's alma mater.
Oh, nice.
Let's
Fighting
go.
Illini.
Yeah.
Fighting people from Illinois.
Yeah.
Love that mascot. No, and Jonathan Taylor, over 5,000 career rushing yards, only the third player to do it before their senior season.
So he could be threatening what Ron Dane's career rushing record.
Yeah.
Another Wisconsin Badger.
Right. But yeah, he joins the likes of Herschel Walker. And I believe LaMichael James, the only other two.
Not bad
Whoa,
company.
Let's
yeah.
go.
And then last week, South Carolina with a huge upset of Georgia. Well, right now, they're still thinking upset as they've got number 9 Florida in Columbia, South Carolina. They are tied 10-10 midway through the second quarter. Will Muschamp looking for some revenge on his old Gators squad. Number 11, Auburn. They're up 17-0 on Arkansas. Arkansas, not so good in the SEC. They're 0-3 right now. And then number 23, Iowa, taking on Purdue right now, 9-0 as they approach the end of the first half. Some other games later today, number 2, LSU, traveling to Mississippi State. You've got number 19, SMU, taking on Temple. There's only one other game outside of the Pac-12 today between two ranked teams. That's Michigan-Penn State, 4:30 today on ABC. That's where the site of College Game Day was today. So.
Corso put on the Penn State headgear today. So.
Who was the celebrity today?
I missed the celebrity.
Okay,
I just saw the
I
headgear.
On the spot. Just the headgear. You know what? That was the
someone
celebrity.
Lame.
Is
the
it,
headgear was the celebrity.
Was it Keegan-Michael Key?
Oh.
Nice.
I retract my statement, not someone lame.
He's a big Penn State. Mm-hmm. Penn Stater.
That's right.
He did the thing where because he looks a lot like
James Franklin.
Yeah. Yeah. He walked into a team meeting one time dressed as James Franklin.
So that is the college football scoreboard early on in Saturday's action. So let's get to this hour's Big 3.
Number 1.
Oh, it's my cue. The Yankees, they saved off elimination for at least one more night with their 4-1 victory over the Astros in Game 5 last night. James Paxton, the big maple, coming up large, striking out 9 Astros over 6 solid frames, out-dueling Justin Verlander, who had a really tough start, allowing 2 quick home runs to the Yankees. Very fast turnaround in the ALCS. Game 6 today from Houston. No travel day because of the rainout earlier in the series. Both teams going with a bullpen day in an elimination. I think that would serve the Yankees better because their bullpen actually really good. In the National League, Washington awaiting the winner after their very quick sweep of St. Louis. The World Series set to begin on Tuesday of next week at the home of whichever AL team locks up the American League pennant. It's looking like it could be Houston, but I'm rooting for seven games in the ALCS because nothing better than a game seven.
Number two.
Well, the NBA and China continue their fallout as players and coaches and owners continue to speak up on the issues and the meetings that the league held with players in China last week. And one of the people speaking up, to much surprise, Kyrie Irving talking up about this situation and talking about why it was important to him actually to speak out on this situation. And he was one of the people who was pretty vocal in China last week, and he talks about essentially there's a few things that he stands for in his life and as a human being: inner peace, freedom, equality, and world peace. So if any of those are being tested or conflicted inside of me, I'm definitely going to have something to say. So surprising from a flat earther to have such rational thoughts on a very complex issue. It's going to continue to have a ripple effect, not only here in the NBA, but in other sports leagues around the world as well. So it's really interesting situation and very fluid. And I know a lot of people look to the NBA to push the boundaries in sports and to push everything forward in sports culture. And this is one of those situations where they're going to do it in the good and the bad, and you're going to see what comes along with both, and it's going to bring out both sides as well. It's a really controversial topic, especially in this country. So as the season starts next week, we're going to find out more about the situation between these two entities.
Number three.
Oh, Patrick Mahomes, man, this was so sad and a little bit horrific to see on Thursday Night Football. Dislocated his right kneecap on a quarterback sneak during the second quarter of the Chiefs' 30-6 drubbing of the Denver Broncos, whatever offense that was that they trotted out there. It was a right patellar dislocation. And the MRI later in the week, Andy Reid and Mahomes very optimistic about it, about Mahomes potentially returning this season. According to Adam Schefter, the team got the best case scenario from the MRI result, meaning there was no extensive or additional damage. Adam Schefter reports that he'll miss at least 3 weeks, but the official ongoing rehab process and what that will be like is still up in the air at this point. From my understanding, it's one of those things where you could have surgery, could be season ending. You could wait and wait till the season ends to then have surgery. But I think the scary part is the risk of re-injury. And with someone like Patrick Mahomes, who is the face of the franchise, the face of football kind of right now, you know, that young, exciting player, the reigning MVP, you don't want to chance that. That's a really expensive knee that you've got there, Patrick. Because somebody's about to get paid here pretty soon. So, in the meantime, hello, Matt Moore. Hero Matt Moore, just like we all predicted. Stepping into that game, the veteran did a pretty good job. But now they are going to be relying a lot on their defense in Kansas City to take them through this next stretch without Mahomes.
And it's not every week you get to play the Denver Broncos offensive line where you had 9 sacks against Denver on Thursday night. That I feel bad for Joe Flacco.
Do you?
Yes.
Okay.
You get tackled that many times as a quarterback, like that's a rough go of it.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, Joe Flacco's got a lot of money in that bank account to take care
that's
of it,
true.
But yeah.
I mean,
but is he elite, Curtis?
True. Well, they'll
no.
What do you guys think of after that game? All of the reports of people and fans saying, "Yeah, Elway, we get it. You're a legend, but maybe it's time for you to go."
It's a long time coming, I think.
Yeah.
I'd say so, too.
Yeah. They have just had...
You got Peyton, you got the Super Bowl, but...
Yeah, like when you sign Peyton Manning, obviously that's going to come with a bunch of playoff appearances.
Like, you got Von Miller, okay? Yes,
exactly.
We get it.
DeMarcus Ware was on that great defense that they had. I mean, anybody who signs those guys is going to have tons of success right out of the gate. And it's pretty clear that he has not been able to develop or find anybody that can develop a quarterback. And it's weird that Elway, being a former quarterback, you think he would go with an offensive-minded guy because they had success with Gary Kubiak as their head coach. He was there when they won the Super Bowl. But he went Vance Joseph, who was a defensive coordinator. They were terrible under him. Vic Fangio's gotten off to a really bad start. They're 2-5. Like, maybe if you want to help develop a young quarterback, somebody who is, you know, you're going to hit your wagon to, which they've got Drew Lock, who is on IR right now, but is eligible to come off, I think, in week 9. Mm-hmm. Maybe surround him with guys who are going to help develop him and bring him along and, you know, just –
maybe do something.
Give him the best time.
Yeah, just do something. I don't know.
Yeah.
And I wonder, because that is such a big, loud, demanding fan base, what this will mean if, A, there's going to be a fire sale on that team in the coming weeks before the trade deadline, and if they try to move anybody and everybody that they have of value, and then B, what the ultimate future for the front office is. Because I would imagine that Broncos fans not sitting well with this.
Oh, God, no. Mm-hmm. They're one of the most boisterous fan bases.
Yes.
You think, you know, being in, like, the Rocky Mountains, you'd have just this kind of like, oh, checks, we're in the mountains.
Peaceful,
yeah.
Hanging out. It's
no.
Scenic here.
They are a fan base that gets after it. Some other honorable mentions, the NBA regular season tipping off on Tuesday night. The Raptors will be raising their championship banner at the Scotiabank Center.
Let's go.
And then yes. Clippers-Lakers also in that doubleheader on Tuesday night from, I believe the Clippers are the home team that game. So we'll get to see.
From Staples. Either way,
yeah,
it's from Staples.
It is. Kawhi Leonard making his debut for the Clippers. Zion Williamson, unfortunately, getting some bad news this week. He'll miss the first 2 weeks. At least the first 2 weeks of the season, dealing with a knee injury that suffered in the preseason. Then Jalen Ramsey, we didn't get into this yet, but dealt to the Rams for 2 first-round picks. We'll talk some NFC West, go around the NFC West coming up at 11:15 today. 49ers with sort of an easy go of it against Washington, but easy go of it on paper, as we know you got to play
right.
The game. But Jalen Ramsey, a huge blockbuster move, a blockbuster move you don't really see in season in the NFL quite so often.
And one of those that made you scratch your head, because a lot of their struggles have been on offense, not on defense. I get it. You traded Marcus Peters the same day to the Ravens. We'll see him in town on Sunday. Aqib Talib, you had to put him on IR, but this one did not make sense to me because You went all out for it. Ramsey wants to get paid here pretty soon, and I still have so many questions about your offense.
Yeah, it's curious.
But
to say
as
the
a
least.
Seahawks fan, doesn't it make you hyped up?
Love it.
Yes.
Like, who would have thought that the Rams would be in almost desperation mode a year ago?
Burn it to the ground.
We got a correction from the 253 on who the game day picker was today. It was not Keegan-Michael Key.
Okay, thank you.
It was Good Morning America host Laura Spencer, who is decidedly not Keegan-Michael Key.
Yeah.
No.
So
retract my retraction of the statement, and it was someone lame.
Yeah.
So that was today's game day picker. But coming up next, the NBA finding themselves in very hot water with China. Where did this all go wrong? We do our best to unpack it all next. Seattle Sports Saturday, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Seattle Sports Saturdays with Lydia Cruz, Curtis Rogers, and Taylor Jacobs.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
We need those questions that you may be too afraid to ask out loud about sports, but you can gladly text them into the Coors Light text line, 710-710. Asking for a friend, that's coming up in about 15 minutes from now. Curtis Rogers, Taylor Jacobs with you. Very hairy situation in the NBA that's been brewing over the last couple of weeks. It all started with Houston Rockets general manager Daryl Morey tweeting his support for the protesters in Hong Kong who are fighting for freedom. And it, you know, it's an incredibly noble cause, especially going up against a government like China where it's, you know, very totalitarian and you're not supposed to make waves there.
Tweeting it out during the week the NBA is in China as well.
Yes, the Nets and Lakers were playing an exhibition series in, I think it was Beijing. And then also the Rockets having the ties to China that they do. It's where Yao Ming played his NBA career, the entirety of his NBA career. And then also because of that, it's very similar to how the Mariners have ties to Japan, even without Ichiro here anymore, or at least on the 25-man roster, where they're kind of the, outside of whatever team is the most popular in the NBA, they're kind of everybody else's rooting interest in the country because of the ties to Yao Ming. And so because of that, there has been very heightened tensions between China and between the NBA, and so much so that the NBA could lose out on a ton of revenue that they get from the country, which would then impact the NBA salary cap. It would remove about 15% of the NBA salary cap. That's what some estimations have it as, all because of a single tweet that Daryl Morey had that he has since deleted, obviously. And I don't think he thought it was going to have any kind of impact beyond just him lending a voice to a cause he felt worthy. But, holy cow, it has set off a firestorm that I think is going to linger over this NBA season for as long as this draws out, because if this impacts the salary cap, this isn't something that's going to go away anytime soon.
And not only that, it's now sort of brought in LeBron James, the league's biggest figure since Michael Jordan. He's been now sort of embattled into this controversy as well with his comments, basically.
Yeah, we've heard from a lot of people, but they haven't said much in all this because they're so worried about, you know, getting on the bad side of the Chinese government, because LeBron James has a lot of business ties over there.
Yeah.
He's, you know, huge with Nike, that has a ton of, you know, a huge, pardon the pun, but a huge footprint in China.
Yeah.
And he's got a, you know, Space Jam 2's coming out next year. You think he's going to do anything to jeopardize a Chinese release of Space Jam 2? No, like, this is a guy who's got a lot of business opportunities over there, and so he's not going to, you know, he's not going to make sure that, you know, that gets ruined or anything. But it's weird how we've seen the NBA go from this league that is so used to speaking out on controversial issues. They allow their players and they allow their coaches, like Greg Popovich and Steve Kerr, to really, you know, speak their mind freely on issues specifically here in America. But as soon as it's become foreign and as soon as it's issues that affect the NBA's bottom line, we've seen guys get bottled up. We've seen a lot of these guys who we're so used to turning to in these situations say really nothing on this matter.
Yeah, and it almost feels it. Look, it's such a complex issue because I always want to have people speak their mind. That's one of the great things about America, is you have the freedom of speech, and that's, you have the ability to speak your mind and your opinions and to give those in a way that, you know, hopefully doesn't endanger other people. But this is just one of those situations where, you know, people in Hong Kong are fighting for democracy and for freedom, and that's such a big thing. And it's hard to even...
And it's bigger than any sports thing. It's bigger than anything that, you know, we... talk about, really.
We're not going to solve it here in the next 7 minutes we're discussing this topic. We just, it is one of the things affecting the sports world, so it's important, I think, for all of us to talk about it and to talk about the fact that the NBA is allowing their players and coaches to talk about it and the ramifications that come with that. Look, and some is going to be good. You're going to have players who are going to stand up and fight for the right cause and for freedoms and justice. And you're going to have people who are going to cost the league by doing that. And it's really a weird thing for the NBA to be in, to be at, in the situation where, you know, America and China have this complicated relationship, not only now, but they have in the past and of recent memory too. So it just feels like we're in a weird spot where we're looking to the NBA to almost be this bridge to
just
help,
like, moral compass,
right, and to help guide us in this complex issue with China. And I don't know if that's fair to the NBA. I don't know if it's fair for us to put that pressure on the NBA, because I don't know if we even put that pressure on our own government.
I don't think it's fair to put that kind of pressure on these athletes, but they routinely will sound off on issues here,
yes,
domestically, to where we've been so accustomed to asking for their opinion on these kinds of, you know, human rights and social justice and all these issues, that the moment that it affects their earning potential, the moment that these kinds of issues impact the kinds of endorsements they can get, Like Klay Thompson, for example, his shoe sponsor is a Chinese company, mm-hmm. Anta. And because of this, Anta has now pulled out of being a sponsor of the NBA. They will allow Klay Thompson to still wear their product, but they're not going to give the NBA any kind of money or any kind of publicity. And so because of that, it's impacting guys in the bottom line. There was a story written on ESPN.com this week. I forget who wrote it. I think it was Dave McMenamin, who covered the Cavaliers for all sorts of years. He's now with ESPN.com. He talked about the immediate aftermath of the exhibition series that the Lakers and Nets had. He didn't name the specific player, but he said because of this issue, this player had a sponsorship agreement in place with a Chinese company that was for $1 million. And because of this, that company tore up the contract and said, we're not doing business with you because of this tweet from Daryl Morey. And like this guy lost out on $1 million for something that was completely out of his control. But at the same time, the Chinese people are, you know, looking out for themselves in this because at the end of the day, it's their money. They can do whatever they want with it. But the NBA, I think they did not realize the controversy that could ensue mm-hmm. by linking up so tightly with Chinese businesses and the government over there, because I mean they're not as understanding and they don't allow people to speak their minds as freely as you can here in America.
Yeah.
And because of that, they've now seen a big hit to their bottom line. And you know, the NBA, just for whatever reason, they like to parade themselves as this great league where players can speak their mind, but it's not the case as we used to know it.
Yeah, and it feels really hypocritical, you know what I mean? That they empower their athletes in one way and then completely block them in the same way in just a different lens. And look, the text from the 206 talking about having lived abroad, and I learned it's better to tread very lightly on other countries' business. I agree with you. The problem is this is also our business, and our NBA business is now rooted in China and internationally as well. So unfortunately, from the NBA lens, we're not going to talk about from a political socioeconomic lens. We're just going to talk about it from the NBA and their relationship with this league. It's difficult. It's a difficult thing to talk about, and man, just we live in a time where it's everything is hypercritical and everyone is hypercritical. So I understand the backlash, and I also wonder how much of it is inflated with social media and other things like that as well, and how much of it is true outrage for the, you know, the human issues taking place, and how much of it is people being mad at LeBron James and the NBA. I just wonder about things like that, and I hope that people are caring more about the actual human rights things than what LeBron James's opinion may be.
Let's have some fun. I mean, yes, that's a very serious topic that, you know, we try to, you know, tackle head on here on Seattle Sports Saturday, but let's have some fun as we do each and every week around 10:30. Asking for a Friend, a segment we tried out a couple weeks ago. It was a fun one. And it's your turn on the Coors Line text line 710-710 to ask those questions you may be embarrassed to ask out loud in front of your friends, because maybe, you know, it's a question you've had for a long time about sports that you just have never been able to get an answer to. Text that into the Coors Light text line 710-710. We do our best to answer those next. We'll also ask some of our own right here, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Seattle Sports Saturdays with Lydia Cruz, Curtis Rogers, and Taylor Jacobs.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Asking for a Friend. Those questions you have about sports that you may have never gotten an answer to, or at least a straight answer to. We're going to do our best to give you those right now. Coors Light text line is there for you, 710-710. Curtis Rogers and Taylor Jacobs with you here on this Saturday morning. And a lot of good ones coming in, as they always do around this time whenever we do this segment. Let's get into it, because, mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of good questions here. From the 425, This is a pretty funny one here. They say, what does it mean when they say a running back is a downhill runner? The field looks pretty flat to me. Well,
good point.
That's a very good point, 425. That's a very good point.
I think what they're referring to is that when one runs downhill,
you pick up speed as you go.
Correct, yes. And it looks almost easier when you're running downhill versus someone who's running uphill, which is maybe a little bit more difficult. You know, your endurance is tested.
You and I would be described as uphill runners.
Yes. Yeah. Most every day, they describe us as uphill runners.
We run out of breath walking up the stairs.
Those are big stairs, though. So I'm getting winded thinking about it.
From the 425, Taylor, you probably could answer this one better than me. They could say, my friend still doesn't totally understand offsides in soccer. If you kick the ball to your teammate, who happens to be further down the field than the defenders, is that automatically offside?
Yeah, so when the ball is played, essentially a line is drawn across the field, imaginary line across the field, where the last defender is standing. And that is essentially where forwards or attacking players can't go past that line when the ball is played. So you want to be as even with that last defender as possible. And when the ball is played forward, that's when you want to break out and run behind the defensive line as quick as possible. So people will try and play what's called the offsides trap, and where they try and catch teams and play the ball forward and try and catch them flat-footed, and so that line is stagnant so that the player can run behind that last imaginary line and score a little bit easier.
Just one of those quirks about soccer.
Yep.
I think it's weird. Well, not weird, but like, if you really want to learn a sport that you have not played or have not watched yourself, play the video game version of
honestly, it. That it's such a good recommendation. I know it obviously sounds weird coming from the guy who plays video games with Seahawks players every week, but no, seriously, pick up FIFA, you know, pick up NHL 20, get one of those games, mess around in the game a little bit, feel out just the rules, why things happen. You can kind of learn a little bit easier when you experience it versus when you're watching it trying to figure out what it is, because the game will stop you. It'll tell you what the infraction was, and you can say, okay, what caused that? Why did I get that penalty or infraction? You can learn. Great advice, Curtis. Play the video games. Always play video games. That's the advice on this segment.
It's good. It's good advice for all things. And then also from the 206, they say in NFL talk, what do they mean when they refer to the nickel or nickel back? So in football lingo, the nickel defensive back being nickel stands for five. And that happens when there are five defensive backs out on the field. You've got in a base defense like the Seahawks run a 4-3, you've got four defensive linemen, three linebackers, and then four defensive backs. Well, you bring the nickel in, you got to take somebody else off the field. So now you've got five defensive backs representing the nickel. I don't know why they don't call it the fifth defensive back, but
right.
As we know in the NFL, the explanations, if you've ever heard like Jake Heaps or Michael Bumpus or Brock Heward or Dave Wyman, Paul Moyer, any of them actually say the name of a play in their playbook, it's just a load of just garbage that they're spitting at you.
Yeah.
Because you have no idea what they're saying.
Right, because essentially they're calling out different things for different position groups in the play. So
and you have to lump it all in one.
Right, so you have a read as a receiver, you're listening for something, you know, maybe it's gold nine or something. Some sort of terminology is what you're trying to key in on. So, yeah, football doesn't make it easy. They definitely don't make it easy.
No, they don't just do it how we do, like in the backyard where, hey, I want you to run to the light post and then a 5-yard button hook, I'll hit you right there by the blue Toyota. No, that's not how it goes in the NFL. They don't make it easy with their terminology. Some questions that we had.
Yep.
Lydia left us with one. She said, why is the shortstop number 6 and not 5 when it comes to baseball scoring? So if you've ever scored a baseball game, pitchers 1, catchers 2, first base is 3, second base 4. It skips over shortstop. 5 gets third base, 6 is shortstop. Very confusing. I think just because when you're saying them, you know, first base, second base, third base, and then shortstop, I think because if you list them, I think that's the only reason I can think of why it would be 6 and not 5.
Yeah.
But when you look at a field, it would only make sense to make shortstop 5 and third base 6. baseball has more of these weird quirks than any sport.
Yeah, I think that quirks is a good word to put it, because it makes sense, but also I understand the question. Like, I understand where the question could come from, and there's definitely things. And look, I think we'll get into it maybe the next time we do this segment, but I was talking about pitching and how they showed Max Scherzer's had two pitches that came out of his hand looking the exact same, and they break in a completely different way. And I'm just fascinated to know, you know, why that occurs. How is he able to do that? Why is he able to do that? So that's a little bit more complex and a little bit more in depth. One of my questions was, I hear this all the time, especially from UW fans, how the wave was invented at UW, and that the wave is something big that they can claim as their own. And so I needed to know who really started the wave. So it looks like there is two sort of moments that they can figure out. There was an Edmonton Oilers hockey game in the early 80s that was occurring, where they think that the wave accidentally started by different sections standing up and cheering at different times, and it ended up going around the stadium in a perfect circle, hence looking like a wave. MLB playoffs game, Oakland A's versus the New York Yankees, 1981. We also have video evidence or photographic evidence of a wave being performed. Now, this was more impromptu, more casual, but definitely evidence of it starting. Now, 2 weeks later, Curtis,
okay,
there is evidence of Seattle fans using the wave at a University of Washington football game,
okay,
in 1982. So shortly after the late 1981s, in the early 1982s, the UW fans did, in fact, do their own wave. And since then, you know, soccer fans, 1984, Brazil, Italy, at Stanford Stadium, you can see the wave happening there as well. So early 80s, it would appear either a hockey game in Canada or a baseball game here in the States is the origin. But UW, you do have some claim as to the origin story of the wave.
Okay.
There
okay.
you go.
425 texting in there. I believe this is a very feasible answer as to why shortstop would be scored as six and not five. They say, let's see here. Shortstop started as a fourth outfielder in the early days of baseball. As balls improved and made a bit heavier, the shortstop moved to the infield. This is why shortstop is number six in scoring and not five, which would make more sense to the modern eye looking at how these fielders are usually positioned. Shortstop used to play shallow left, hence deeper or six.
There you go.
So there we go.
425, shout out. See, we're learning together.
We are. And you can never learn enough.
Nope.
Never stop learning. Don't
nope.
ever stop learning. From the 253, they want to try to, they're trying to understand icing in hockey.
Yes.
Good question, which, as we're all going to learn here over the next couple of years, the NHL, the rules, it's a very fast-paced game, and it's hard to get lost, or it's easy to get lost in some of the weird rules that they have. Icing is a rule in place that forces teams to skate the puck out of their own end into the attacking zone, at least into the neutral zone and the other team's opposing end. If you just shoot it from your own end behind the red line, which is the halfway point of the rink, then if you shoot it to the other end of the ice and it gets untouched by the other team, then it is an icing call, and there's a face-off in your own end.
Correct.
So you have to skate it out past the red line, then you can dump it into the other team's zone. That's icing.
That's you. Icing. We're going to learn more hockey rules. Curtis, Lydia, and myself, all hockey fans. We all have different levels of expertise in the sport as well. So text coming in. We do know about hockey and the rules. So as this segment continues to grow and we get more texts, and as we get more interested in hockey, we're going to fill you in. We're going to learn you, as Paul Gallant said.
I wonder if there's a promo that says anything
nope.
about that. No? Okay. Coming up next year, Seattle Sports Saturday. Big day in college football, not just here in the state of Washington, with the Ducks taking on the Huskies, but a big day in the Pac-12 South as well. A lot of jockeying for position as we enter into the midway point of the college football year. We get into that next. Curtis Rogers, Taylor Jacobs, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Seattle Sports Saturdays with Lydia Cruz, Curtis Rogers, and Taylor Jacobs.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
believe it or not, there are actually other college football games going on in today here on Saturday.
What?
Especially in the Pac-12 South.
Yeah, I think people are going to overlook that just because, you know, USC and Arizona aren't ranked, Curtis. It's not a flashy matchup that we're used to. And ASU, Utah, two teams. I mean, Utah underachieving, ASU overachieving so far this year. But the winners of these two matchups most likely are heading for a collision course for the South Championship and a shot at the Pac-12 Championship title.
Yeah, and we know in the Pac-12 North, Oregon has the chokehold on that divisional race right now. But if Washington picks up a win today, they're just one game back in the loss column. And Oregon has played one less conference game than the Huskies have at this point. So there's a possibility that Oregon somewhere along the way could slip up again. And if that happens, Washington, with a win today, would then take control of the North race because they would hold the tiebreaker over the Ducks in that scenario. But the Ducks would have to lose two the rest of the way in the conference, which I think could happen. I mean, it's as we've seen this year in the Pac-12, really anything is possible. I know at the end of every college football season, somebody tweets out or posts a picture of like, Team X beat Team Y, Team Y beat Team Z, Team Z beat Team A.
The territorial maps.
Yeah,
and
it's
like
a giant circle of like everybody has beaten everybody.
Right.
And like through the transitive property, this means that the worst team in the conference is better than the best team in the conference because everybody beat everybody.
Right.
That's how it's going to be in the Pac-12 this year, I feel like. I don't see Oregon running the table in the conference. Now, I could be totally wrong because they've only allowed one touchdown in 5 weeks since the opening week against Auburn. But today's their stiffest test against Washington.
And it starts a big stretch for them, too.
Yeah.
UW this week, Wazoo next week, who has had Oregon's number for some reason. Then at USC versus Arizona at ASU. So it's like USC and Arizona are good teams, and they have a lot to play for still. So there's going to be a stretch in there where they're going to be truly challenged. They have the target on their back. It's only going to get bigger as the season goes along. And we're going to find out today what that stretch will potentially look like.
I think of the four teams in the South right now that are tied for first place that are playing today, I would wager that ASU and Utah, the winner of that game, is going to be the favorite heading forward in the Pac-12 South, regardless of what happens between Arizona and USC. USC this season, just they have the 4- and 5-star guys as they've always had, but Clay Helton, I mean, he's just coaching out the string right now. He's got nothing. He's got no juice with that program right now, and they don't have an athletic director, and whoever they hire as an athletic director is going to want to bring in their guy. And we all have heard the Urban Meyer rumors to USC, and there's a possibility that USC would hire Jeremy Foley, the former Florida athletic director who hired Urban Meyer at Florida.
Yep.
Get those two guys back together. Urban Meyer's already out in L.A. right now because he works for Fox Sports. If that were to happen, I mean,
if they hire him as AD, that just go ahead and chalk up Urban Meyer taking that job. That's almost a certainty if he takes that role. But, yeah, USC is irrelevant nationally right now.
Yes.
And they may be relevant in the Pac-12 and the race for the South and the race for the Pac-12 title, but nationally, USC from 2006 to now, what a fall this program has gone through. And I know there were obviously the allegations and the suspensions and the sanctions all came down and all the shuns that they went through at USC. But it is just sad to see that this is where that program is right now. 3-3 is kind of embarrassing for what we've come to expect from USC.
I mean, even UCLA is still alive in the Pac-12 South race. They got a big win over Stanford this last Thursday night on the farm in Palo Alto. So the Pac-12 South race in 2019, or just the Pac-12 race in general, right now, at this current juncture of the season, if you had to pick a Pac-12 title game, who are you going with?
Right now, it feels like it's going to be Oregon ASU, just the way the two teams are playing. ASU is playing really good football. They seem to be well coached, well prepared. They don't make a ton of mistakes. They don't give teams opportunities to beat them.
And their quarterback, Jaden Daniels, a true freshman, he has looked he has looked much better than a true freshman.
Right, and he's not making those, you know, decisions that we've come to expect from freshmen, forcing the ball into tight coverage, trying to make the big plays happen, trying to bring his team, if they're down, you know, to score all the points in one big play. You can't do that. And ASU really has looked like that type of a team. And on the flip side, in the North, Oregon, they haven't allowed a touchdown, like you said, Curtis, since Auburn.
They've allowed one touchdown since Auburn.
So yeah. That's just, again, a remarkable thing to think about. This UW team is trying to find their identity, and I think in the second half of that Arizona game, they started to figure out what it was. And we're going to find out in this game if they can hold that up. If they can, look out. UW might be able to truly take back the North and repeat as the North champs again. But if UW goes down today, I think it's Oregon coasting to the finish line to take on whoever ends up winning in the South.
If Oregon beats Washington today, the Ducks will be the only team with a winning conference record in the North. That's it.
Wow.
Right now, the Huskies are at 500. Stanford's in third place. They're 2-3.
Yeah.
Cal and Oregon State, they play today.
So one of them will have two Pac-12 wins at the end of the day, right?
Yeah. So actually, not everybody will have a losing record, but nobody will have a winning record besides Oregon in the Pac-12 North after today if the Huskies lose. That's
yes.
a big if.
Big
which
if.
I think they've got a good shot today. I think they have a good shot of beating Oregon just because they are so much different than the quality of opponent that the Ducks have faced so far after the Auburn game. And Auburn, they're a talented bunch,
yep.
much in the same way that the Huskies are. And we saw the Ducks, you know, just let that one slip through their hands in week one. So right now, I would have to say that the race in both divisions, I would say Oregon, yes, they're the favorites right now in the North because they've got a two-game lead on the Huskies. In the South, I'm going to go Utah. And I think it's a testament to Kyle Whittingham's coaching ability.
Mm-hmm.
That's a guy that's going to get you at least 8 wins every year. And if things break right for the Utes, you can get upwards of 9, 10, not 11, but
no.
You can get up to about 10 wins in Utah if things go your way, and that's not an easy place to play at all, especially at nighttime. That place gets rocking. That place is a madhouse at times. They make it very well known that they are not BYU.
Yes.
Down in that state of Utah.
Yep.
That's a pride point of theirs that they get a little more rowdy than BYU down in that state. But right now, Utah, they were the conference favorites heading into this season, which I think is something that gets lost on people because Utah's not a sexy brand of the Pac-12.
That's a great point.
They are a team that, you know, you know what you're going to get with them. But this year brought a lot of talent back, brought a lot of guys back from, you know, a really competitive team last year, a team that made it to the Pac-12 title game,
yep.
that gave Washington fits in that Pac-12 title game. To the point where I think only a defensive touchdown was scored. I think it was a 10-3 game.
I believe so, yeah.
Byron Murphy's touchdown. Yeah, so to me, I look at Utah. I think they are the favorites in the South right now. But Herm and what he's got going at ASU, and we learned a little bit more about that program this week in their HBO special, 24/7, which I believe the Coug special's coming up.
Soon. Yeah, they haven't released the full, I guess, order in which they'll be released, but it's got to be coming soon. So
yeah. So ASU, I'll be the first to admit, as an Arizona Wildcat fan,
there it is.
I am very surprised at how well it has gone over the first season and a half for Herm Edwards. Now, I will say this, ASU very notorious for getting off to these kinds of starts and then having the bottom fall out middle of the season. We saw it last year where ASU had a bunch of big wins early on, and then I think they only finished with like 7 wins a year ago. So we've seen it happen before with ASU, but there is a lot of, I think there's a lot of juice in that program,
yeah.
which they have been so desperate for, and they're in an area of the country where you would expect them to put together a great program and recruit well, and you know they've got great facilities,
and a billion students.
Yeah.
Literally a billion people go to ASU.
If you have a pulse, you're in.
You're in. That's literally all you need.
You've got the biggest talent pool to pick from.
Right. You got to get a couple walk-ons just to stumble onto the team because of just the number of human beings on campus. So, yeah. Curtis, I agree with you, though, that just I'm more nervous about this ASU team and buying into to Sparky and buying into the Sun Devils down there. Utah, the more solid program, but boy, if this ASU team can continue doing what they're doing, they're definitely going to be a threat.
And then also in the college football world today, a lot of big games in the Pac-12 with two ranked opponents or two games between ranked opponents, Oregon, Washington, ASU, Utah. The only other game this week between ranked schools, Michigan and Penn State, number 16, Michigan traveling to Penn State. That game gets underway later on this afternoon, but I think that also speaks to just the Pac-12 continuing to eat itself alive, whereas a lot of these schools, they're able to maneuver their way till the end of the season, not really having to play a tremendously difficult schedule. The Pac-12, I mean, is it a good thing that we have these many ranked matchups week in and week out in the Pac-12, or is it ultimately shooting themselves in the foot?
It is a good thing, but you just need those top teams to rise to the top. I think a terrible scenario would be UW, ASU, both winning, knocking Utah and Oregon out of the national conversation, and essentially creating this sort of roadblock of Pac-12 teams in the teens of the rankings in the country. So it's going to be I love having these big games, but you need the big dogs to win them in order to push the conference forward.
Big Dogs.
Big Dogs.
Great brand of clothes.
Love Big Dog. If anyone from Big Dog is listening, I'm still a huge fan. I rock Big Dog all the time. I love Big Dog. Shout out Big Dog.
Coming up next, we give you our needs, wants, and Hail Marys for the Seahawks game against against the Ravens tomorrow. My bad. We need your needs, wants, and Hail Marys as they take on Baltimore and Earl Thomas, Lamar Jackson and company. We get into that next. Curtis Rogers, Taylor Jacobs, 710 ESPN Seattle.